Oh, hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Anyway, there's too much going on in New York State politics this week to not talk about it today on the Vox Pop. Times Union State Editor and Capitol Bureau Chief in New York, now co-host Casey Seiler is here, and we're going to dig into some of the top stories. In particular, Cuomo's approval ratings are the lowest they've ever been, according to the latest Siena poll. U.S. Attorney Pete Bharara is looking into the Buffalo Billions, a Kingston construction firm linked to some top Cuomo donors, got tax deals and funding over higher-rated rivals, potentially exploiting the so-called LLC loophole, and that's just a few. What do you think? 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Now I'm going to challenge you all and tell you what I think about this, just so you'll know. If we have a program on Vox Pop under the Great Ray Graff on Friday, and it's about chocolate chip cookies, every phone, every phone is ringing. But if we have a thing about state politics, I've been teaching it, I've been running the Legislative Gazette, I've been, you know, doing these programs, the Capital Connection, and all like that. And I have to just say that people don't have a lot of stomach for state politics. They just don't. But you do, right out there? You really think about these things because, you know, as we often heard, you get what you deserve. And if the less invested people are, the less this kind of thing happens. Anyway, we're very lucky today because we have the great Casey Seiler with us, and he is great. And I have to tell you, I read his piece in the Albany Times Union this weekend, Sunday. I don't know if one can still get it. Can you, Casey, go online?
Online, yeah. And I would point out that it's a story that Chris Bragg, who's our investigative reporter, and I collaborated on.
Right.
Chris is a terrific investigative journalist, real digger.
He's not here, of course. He doesn't like to brag.
Ba-boom.
So, right. So anyway, the whole point is I want you on the phones with us. I mean, I would lose hope if you're not invested in state politics. So let me start on a couple of things, Casey. We already got one call. That's good. And we'll talk to Michael from Orange County in a minute. But my question to you is this. What's the LLC scandal?
Well, the LLC loophole is basically a loophole that was created by the State Board of Elections roughly 20 years ago in a ruling that followed what was then a federal determination that if you were a businessman and you had a bunch of limited liability companies, for example, if you're a real estate developer and for each one of your developments you set up an LLC for tax purposes and other business advantages, each of those LLCs could give to the maximum to a campaign or to a politician.
So you could have 10, 20,
yeah.
30.
In other words, Alan Chartok or Alan Chartok Incorporated can give up to the maximum, and the maximum is different depending on whether or not you're talking about a legislative race or a gubernatorial race or what have you. But if Alan Chartok, businessman, has Chartok Co. LLC, Alan Co. LLC, you know, and LLC is named after your dog or your wife or your uncle or whatever, each of those LLCs, despite the fact that you control them, can give up to the maximum. So you can multiply by many, many times the force of your giving. Governor Cuomo's biggest contributor, the biggest contributor to lots of statewide politicians and other elected officials, is a guy named Leonard Litwin, who is the head of Glenwood, the owner of Glenwood Management. Mr. Litwin is more than 100 years old, and he is an energetic user of the LLC loophole, so-called.
So here's the point. If you've got a company, right? We've talked about this before, Casey. If you've got a company that wants to get something from the government, and they set up all these LLCs, and they give you $50,000 one way or another, $100,000 one way or another, $1 million one way or another, but they get $50 million back because of this, that is what we consider to be a sort of moral stench around government, right?
Some would describe it as moral stench. Some would describe it as a great ROI or return on investment.
Right.
You know? Yes.
There's something
if
specific.
If you're trying to get a politician's attention, political donations is one very good way to do it.
Now, if Shelley Silver says to a doctor, which is the case with the accusation. Shelley says to the doctor, well, you know, I think I can get you some money for mesothelioma at your clinic, but, you know, it would be nice you could do us a service and send your clients who have mesothelioma to our law firm so that we can, represent them. If he says that into a microphone, that's bribery, right?
I am neither a prosecutor nor an attorney. But what you're talking to is talking about is the idea, the charge, the federal charge against former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, that basically he had allied himself with a doctor, a mesothelioma doctor, and that relationship resulted in what the federal prosecutors are describing as kickbacks in the form of referral fees going back to Silver, and then Silver in return benefiting the doctor through official action, whether state grants or other actions. Silver, of course, has declared his innocence, saying,
sure,
just helping out a good doctor.
Now, this has been going on for years in the legislature, one way or the other. And, you know, in the end, everybody shrugs and says there's nothing really we can do about it. Income on the White Horse coming in from the West is Preet Bharara.
Or the South. The U.S. Attorney for the Southern District.
Quite right.
Yes.
Quite right. And he comes in and he says, guess what, ladies and gentlemen, we're moving the line. And they really did move the line. So that now what used to be de rigueur, is potentially a felony.
He moved the line on enforcement. In other words, he has raised the level of what prompts the attention of a U.S. attorney. And whether or not all that stuff was being done and it was just being done in plain sight, nobody did anything about it, is a very, very good question. But certainly over the last couple of years, there's been a definite change. Do we live in the golden age of ethics, or do we live in the golden age of federal prosecution? I think that's a fair question.
No, we live in the golden age of federal prosecution,
yeah,
in my mind. Now, if I'm a state legislator, I've talked to you about this before, I say, uh-oh, the train is coming down the track. What? You got to be crazy not to do something about this. So I say we clean it up before they clean us up. And there are a lot of knees knocking out there right now because obviously this kind of power sharing or moving around has gone on for a long time among a lot of legislators. Somebody comes and says, can you do this for me? I could do this for you. You would do this for me. Okay, let's go to Michael in Orange County. Okay, Michael, you're on.
Good. Casey, you and I spoke yesterday about this story, and I heard you were on, and I wanted to call in. First of all, it's plainly bribery, and we should call it what it is. I am a Harvard-trained lawyer, and there's no question that the whole system disputes the bribery. My question is this to both of you. Where are the politicians in New York who have a different set of values? Why aren't they speaking out? Governor Cuomo started out with the Moreland Commission as someone who had a different set of values, and obviously when it got too close, he prostituted his own values and is moving in a totally different direction, defending play to pay. I think that we need a group of politicians in the state who have different values and project them. I don't see them.
Yeah, so the sort
I'd
of,
like to know who's there, what they're talking about.
Sort of like in the old days in the Congress, the Cannon, the revolution against Speaker Cannon, when people, did.
There have always been people in the state who had a different set of values, whether they be Liz Holtzman or Bob Abrams or whoever they might be. I don't see or hear them.
Yeah, that's because
who's there?
They don't stay long, Michael. Casey?
I think there are good politicians out there who will act against their own, including their party's self-interest.
Sure, like the good Kruger in the Senate, as opposed to the bad Kruger.
Liz Kruger as opposed to Carl Kruger, I believe, still behind bars.
Yes.
But Daniel Squadron, for example, who's a Democrat from Manhattan, has been one of the most energetic advocates for closing down the LLC loophole. There are those on the Assembly side as well. Michael Gennaris, who is now the number two in the state Senate, Democrat in the state Senate, worked very hard and really bucked Sheldon Silver when he was an assemblyman to try and change the redistricting system, which is very, very good for both majority conferences. And that, you know, and that attempt at reform failed after 2010, when the governor came in and essentially kind of cut a deal with the two majority conferences for what was seen by many as sort of half a loaf redistricting reform.
Yeah, well, I'll never forgive him for that one, because he campaigned for governor saying that he was going to not allow them to draw their own districts in this democracy, in quotes, around here, and that didn't happen. Okay, we're going to take a short break, and we will be right back with Casey Seiler. In the meantime, come on, folks, 1-800-348-2551.
Comes from Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more, where eyewear is an art. Facebook or visionexceleyecare.com. Lori Stilwell, CPA PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond. StilwellCPA.com. Water Wheel Village, Galway, New York, specializing in extra sharp New York cheddar since 1923. Offering imported cheddars, specialty cheeses, nostalgic candies, local baked goods, honey, and maple products in every corner of our store. WaterWheelVillage.com. The Lathrop Community, serving older adults in the Quaker tradition for 25 years. Independent living in Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, in the heart of the Pioneer Valley. Lathrop.Kendall.org. And Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, a community-owned natural grocery store dedicated to sustainable agriculture, the local economy, and the environment. Berkshire.coop.
One 1-800-348-2551. Casey Seiler, who wrote one of the best articles I have ever read on state politics this weekend, and the co-host of New York Now, and a television show on public television, right?
Yes. Yeah. Every time you praise me for the story, I'm going to point out that it was co-bylined by Chris Bragg.
Well, you should, and that's really great. However, he's not here. He was invited, but he's not here.
Yes, he's hard at work on another good piece.
On another good piece, yes. Right. Well, and as we all know, Rex Smith has a great deal to do with this, and his colleague, associate editor Mike Spain, is on several times a week on a roundtable. We have a wonderful relationship between the newspapers.
The Times Union is a paper that does very well by investigative journalism, without a doubt. We're very proud of that.
They do. 1-800-348-2551. I wanted to point out one thing before we move ahead, and that is that, okay, so let's say you're living over there in Massachusetts where I live. What, you think this is different than any other place? Corruption is corruption, political corruption. How many speakers have gone to jail in Massachusetts? My goodness, a lot of people. One of the great quotes, I hope it wasn't apocryphal, that I heard second or third hand was one of those guys turned around to a state legislator who told me the story and said, "I guess I've just stayed too long."
Exactly. The wheel comes round again for everybody sooner or later. Yeah.
And the temptations are huge. I mean, we all knew for a long time, and I had Shelley on the air here many times, but we all knew that you weren't going to get tort reform in New York State as long as Shelley was working with those guys, with that firm.
Right. And many has been the examples of me saying, what a nice guy, you know, really, what a charmer.
Sure. And
what I've learned is, well, not in the case of Sheldon Silver, who I've never really interacted with all that much and on anything more than an ask him a question in a press conference way, but a lawmaker who you think, that seems like a pretty nice guy, and which is, you realize, is no protection against that person being hauled off in handcuffs.
Alan Hevesy.
And Hevesy was before my time. I came down to the Capitol in 2008, so he was already gone.
You know, I talked to Shelley Silver many, many times on the radio, and he would get on and he'd say, "I'm Sheldon Silver." It was very funny. One day I'm in the Capitol, and there's Shelley, and he's walking alone. No entourage, and I've talked to him maybe 100 times. but it's always on the telephone, so he doesn't know who I am.
Right. So, you would always see him, even when he was Speaker, when he was at kind of the pinnacle of his power. He would walk into the Capitol just like any other schmo, you know, carrying his briefcase. Hi, so Speaker. Hi, how you doing?
So
you
know. I see him, and I say, Shelley. And he looks at me, and I said, Alan Sharter. Oh, Alan, you know, how are you? Well, anyway, the story goes back because when I founded the Legislative Gazette, a student newspaper, all those years ago, somebody got an entrepreneurial, you know, hit and did a story about how Shelley had gone into the hospital. And you may not know this, but at one point, Shelley, who was a thin man, was quite adipose.
Mm-hmm.
And so he comes out, and he doesn't think it's appropriate that we said he had been in the hospital, the Legislative Gazette. And so 1979, something like that, he remembers this all those years. There we are down in the there we are down in the Capitol. Shelley says to me, who I've had on the radio all those times, Alan, what are you doing down here? And I say, you know, Shelley, I'm teaching my Legislative Gazette class. He says, oh, I don't like the Legislative. I don't like the Legislative Gazette.
The grudge.
This guy had a long memory.
That's what they say. What's that? The great line from The Power Broker. They had a history, you know?
Let's go to Jane in Sullivan County. Jane, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Suzanne from Dutchess County.
Okay. Yeah, well, I pressed one, and it said Jane from Sullivan County. So somewhere
well,
there's
maybe
a
maybe she'll be next.
Yeah, she will be next. I guarantee
Anyway, my thing is just it could be said over and over, but we don't do it as much as we feel like we have no power because we don't really understand a lot of what goes on, especially if we don't follow all the time. And I just want to say that I think it really does make a difference if you send these people an email or you call or anything, and you just let them know that you want it to be transparent, that you don't know what's going on. You heard this or you heard that, and you tell their office staff that you're watching and you're going to be following it, and that you hope that it's not what you're hearing.
Yeah.
And I just think that they feel an impunity, and they feel a freedom. And I think that everybody, maybe not everybody, most people act better when they know they're being watched and they have people that care about a certain issue. It's harder for them to just brush it over. And I think that we can give these politicians a tailwind to do whatever they want and not regard what's good for the people. Or we can, you know, be a crosswind all the time. Or occasionally we can be a headwind against their... You know,
they're okay. So, Suzanne, let's let our wonderful guest Casey give an answer. Go ahead.
No, you're right. Yeah. I mean, okay. you hear that from politicians quite a bit. That what they say is out on the campaign trail, they hear about jobs, they hear about education, and frequently they say, I don't really hear that much about ethics. And it's true. And that is the only reason why, you know, it is very confusing to follow campaign finance. And I think that, you know, just based on working on this story, it involved basically having to cross-reference donation records from the Board of Elections to corporate records from the Department of State. So it's a very difficult task. It is. I would argue, intentionally. There is an intention.
Accidentally on purpose.
Accidentally on purpose. That it's difficult to find out, for example, who is behind a specific LLC. If you go to the Department of State and you try to find out who is behind them, sometimes there's plenty of information and there's corporate officers and it's very transparent. In some cases, including many of the LLCs that we dealt with in this story, it is impossible to tell who is behind them. You will find that the only identifying information is a law firm or a company that is involved with setting up LLCs, which is essentially kind of a dead drop.
Now, because the governor takes LLC money, of course.
He does. And what the governor said, the governor claims that he is opposed to the LLC loophole, would like to see it closed. But as long as it is open, he is not going to unilaterally disarm. Lots of groups, lots of good government folks say that he has so much money in his kitty right now that he could easily, you know, kind of unilaterally disarm, and he would still have millions of dollars for, you know, even for 2018.
Mm-hmm.
But to get back to the caller's very good point, It's confusing to talk about redistricting. It's confusing to follow and to understand things like campaign finance. But if she's absolutely right, if you communicate to your politicians what you care about and where you stand on specific proposals and specific issues that will be before the legislature, that makes a difference. You know, a single voice goes into making up lots of voices.
And I can tell you that when I was an intern 10,000 years ago in the New York State Legislature working for Fred Orenstein, I was in the hall one day. And there was two politicians talking, and I knew pretty much what they were getting in the mail. And one said to the other, "They're killing me on this bill." And there were five letters, and they're killing me on this bill, because they almost hear from nobody, Suzanne, and your point is extremely well taken.
If you look at the action that the federal government took on student testing just last weekend, I think while it has taken years and years and a major hue and cry, I think that that action, which is now going to, which New York was already kind of slowly turning the ship around on and other states had already done it, is a direct response to a real groundswell of support. Yes, certainly a groundswell of support augmented by large influence organizations like teachers unions and that kind of thing. But, you know, that's what they're there for. They're there to be advocates for their constituency. But that's a direct result of grassroots and organized outrage coming together.
And Suzanne, one other thing. When I started the Legislative Gazette 35 years ago or something, the legislature itself tried to kill it. And I heard directly from a legislator who came up to me and said, "Your newspaper is dead. We're not going to have it." They said, "We never had it. Why should we?" You know, they wanted to control the information. "We never had it. Why should we?" And then, interestingly, the Republicans assembled. And in the Republican conference was a wonderful man, a Republican named Norman Levy from Long Island. And Norman Levy stood up, looked at his colleagues, and he always denied it. He's dead now. Always denied it. But I knew from three people that he had said it. And he said, "Is that why you came to the legislature, to kill a newspaper that's going to cover the legislature?" And they passed it. And, they let it go. But Suzanne, great point. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Okay. Let's go to Jane in Sullivan County. Jane, is that you?
Yes. Right. How are you?
We're good. How are you?
Good, thank you. I was calling. I'm not sure if you're familiar with. It's a little farther downstate, but it's on the border of Sullivan and Orange County, the village of Bloomingburg.
Tell us about it.
Well, It was a very small village, kind of depressed, and there was some kind of like deal made to annex some property into the village from the town of Mamikating, which surrounded the village.
Yeah.
But as time went on, it was realized that this big 400-unit townhouse development was going to be built in the village on that property, and the village itself only has a population of 400. It's an extremely small village. But my point is that there is a large group of people who really want to essentially control this village, and it seems that the state might actually be helping them along. And I was wondering if this that I'm going to tell you is even legal, because what happened was they had the normal village elections, and they had a relatively high turnout compared to previous years. And what happened was a bunch of new voter registrations popped up, and some of them were about like 30 registrations at one address. And I'm not kidding you, it's in black and white. And as a result, the election allowed one person to get onto the village board who would not have been on.
Well, of course, but that's democracy. If they did it legally, they get away with it. You know, Jane, I'm so sorry. When I grew up on Fire Island, the Fire Island was a family community, much like you're talking about. It was a family community. And then a guy came along, he bought a lot of businesses, and then all of a sudden, all the people who worked for him only in the summer registered to vote on Fire Island. And
I understand
and
that.
And the guy carried the day. Listen, Jane, I wish I could spend more time with you on this. And you've made your point. And I am sure that it sounds very familiar. And I'm sure that our news division has covered it in the past. I would suggest.
Okay, but sir, wait. But that wasn't my point. My point was that the Board of Elections deemed that those voter registrations were, in fact, invalid.
Oh, I
see.
They were deemed
invalid. But then the Board of Elections chose not to act upon it, and as a result, those votes were opened and counted in. And then that was in March, and then the following September, there was a vote to try to dissolve the village and absorb it into the town, thus, I guess, like watering down the voting power. But the same thing happened. New voters moved in. The Board of Elections deemed them ineligible. Then they failed to act on it. Those votes were counted, and boom! Now,
Jane, neither Casey or I is able really.
Yeah,
to,
I've got
to
say I'm not familiar with this situation
because we'd have to know more about it. But I certainly will make sure that our news director takes a personal interest in this. And thanks for calling. Appreciate it very much. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Well, Casey, we have two trials coming up now.
Big ones.
They are. And why don't you talk a little bit about those?
Well, we've spoken about the case against Sheldon Silver, the former Assembly Speaker. There are currently volleys of legal papers going back and forth in that case. It's headed to trial in a couple of weeks now.
Yeah.
And we also have just after that the trial of Dean Skelos. After the start date of the Silver trial, you've got Dean Skelos's case and the case against his son Adam also coming up. It's very, very similar to in basic structure to the case against Silver. In the Skelos case, basically, he is charged and his son charged as well with basically swapping legislative favors for benefits from his business benefactors in the form of income or jobs, alleged no-show jobs in the case of his son, and political benefits as well for the former Senate leader, Dean Skelos. It's amazing stuff. There's wiretap information, copious wiretap information. If you look at the court filings, there are in both cases cooperating witnesses from some very, very well connected, a lobbyist. We spoke about Glenwood Management and Leonard Litwin, one of the senior executives of Glenwood Management. Apparently, has a non-prosecution agreement with Preet Bharara's office. And is cooperating with federal investigators. The doctor who we were speaking about earlier in the Silver case apparently has been working with investigators as well. So it's going to be, and these men could all be acquitted. They have not
they
yet
could.
Been tried. They have all been found innocent.
Joe Bruno was.
After a long, long process.
But he was.
Absolutely,
there we
yes.
had somebody testifying that he sold him a horse that was not worth too much.
Right.
Know, and
I would say that in the case against the cases against both Silver and the two Skelos gentlemen, those are both very, very different cases.
Okay. And I would remind you, not that I think you're wrong, but I would remind you, it just takes one person on a jury.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
To make the thing.
Have you ever seen 12 Angry Men?
I have, and
I know several times.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what
but,
it takes.
But in most of those cases, like 12 Angry Men, it takes, one guy, Henry Fonda, turned everybody around.
Right.
But in most, it just is one guy says, no, I'm not going to vote to convict this guy, and that's it.
Yeah, and he's not going to, unlike Henry Fonda in 12 Angry Men, he doesn't essentially turn into Sherlock Holmes and a prosecutor to argue his case that well. He just kind of sits there and crosses his arms and says, I don't buy it. I don't think they got him. And hey, but that's the system.
Precisely. Okay, listen, we're going to be taking a short 7-second break, a little bit more maybe, and then we'll talk to Kevin in Eastbourne, okay?
comes from the Department of Theater Arts at SUNY New Paltz, presenting a gender-bending Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, staged in an all-girls prep academy, November 12th through 22nd, newpaltz.edu/theater. Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, with a second shop now open on Windmere Avenue in the heart of Greenwood Lake. yeoldwarwickbookshop.com. Fort Hill Auto Body, Amherst, Massachusetts, locally owned and operated since 1997, providing auto body repair, detailing, painting, and glass replacement. A proud supporter of public radio, forthillautobody.com. Curtis Lumber, celebrating 125 years, supporting our communities with sales, service, and supplies at 21 locations in New York and Northern Vermont, curtislumber.com. And New World Catering by Rick Orlando, now hosting weddings, events, business lunches, and family celebrations in the WAMC listening area, newworldcatering.com.
We're here with Casey Seiler of the Times Union newspaper, a terrific newspaper, and you all know Rex Smith from the Media Project. You all know Mike Spain from our morning show, the morning panel on the roundtable, and Casey is not only the state politics bureau chief, right, but a columnist. Is
yep.
that what you do?
Yeah. Yep. Capital editor, yep. state
Capital.
Editor,
and also on New York Now. Public television show. So let's go to Kevin in Eastburn as promised. Kevin, you're on.
Hello, Alan and Casey.
Hello.
I wonder if we could reverse the question today. We look toward the legislature with great chagrin. We shrug our shoulders at the ethical problems that don't get fixed. What about the citizens? How do we get individual people to have more outrage? Do they have to re-up their citizenship every couple of years to show that they're involved? Should they get a tax benefit when they're active citizens? How can we get more outrage that has an effect on the legislature from citizens?
I don't know if we should move towards something like a kind of current events quiz or something like that to see how up people are. The courts have pretty well roundly rejected that, but. You know, it's similar to the question when people say, how can we get parents more involved in their kids' educations? Mm-hmm. You know, the teachers, who I guess in this case would be the analog to elected officials, can't think of it that way. You know, they've got to they're supposed to do their best, you know, with each and every kid, each and every citizen, no matter what. I don't know if that's the best one-to-one analogy, but. You know, it's a very good question, and I myself kind of wonder, and I approve a ton of blog comments on our blog, and a lot of the time, so much of the rhetoric is just people hurling sort of partisan invective at each other, and there seems to be a lot of engagement with whatever your hobby horse is, and not a lot of engagement with actually the kind of facts on the ground of what's going on. And I think a lot of that has less to do with sort of a diminution of citizenship in our society, and more to do with the corrosive effects of online anonymity, where people can just come up with a phony name and just spew whatever they want on a blog. But it's a very good question, you know. Well, but we have laws to guide people when. To guide public officials, even if the public is not engaged. That's why we have prosecutors.
Yeah, but who makes those laws, and how many loopholes do they have? You know, Kevin, I so appreciate, your question, because I know how I've lived my life, which is, I teach the subject. I'm outraged by it. I do the Legislative Gazette. I do a column. I do the radio station. Who else does an hour on this subject on the radio, right?
Okay, well, and I'll put that question to you, Alan. You've been around longer than I have. Not a ton longer, but a lot longer than
lot,
I have.
A lot longer.
Okay. Was it ever thus, or
yeah,
is this?
No, it was. I remember a story. I just want to tell you one more story. I go to see Stanley Steingott. I get a sabbatical at New Paltz. And when you get a sabbatical, you got to have a subject. And my subject was putting the legislature on television. So I go to see Stanley Steingott, and I say, you know, Stanley, you know, how do you feel about the idea of taking some channels on the television and putting the legislature on so people can hold their legislators accountable? He said, it's a terrible idea. I said, why is that? He said, the people would never stand for it, for spending tax dollars on that. Who's gonna pay for it? Well, eventually it came around, and it turned out, you know, they put it on, but the decisions aren't made in the legislature. They're made in their conferences, which are secret.
Yeah.
And they'll tell you, well, everybody leaks from the conference, and they tell you, well, not really true.
But that said, you can watch committee meetings, you can watch hearings. You can watch them all live. You can watch the proceedings. You're right. The big decisions are made in the conference, and the big decisions are made behind closed doors down on the second floor and potentially in, you know, commissioners' offices and that kind of thing. But people can do a heck of a lot more than they could back in, you know, in the day.
I suppose you're right, and one has to really be positive. But, Kevin, you make such a good point, because here's a governor. What does he say? I'm running for office, and I'm not going to let them draw their own districts where only they can win. And then he gets into office, and he doesn't sign that bill. That would have prevented that. He signs the bill, as opposed to saying, I'm not going to sign that bill for that reason. So, look, it's an inside system. I think, by the way, Kevin, the way that people are going to get more and more interested in it, as Preet Bharara and the feds do their thing.
There's no doubt about that.
Right.
He's working so hard, and the knees are knocking, as you said earlier.
Yeah, but because, of course, I mean, if Shelley got some business, if he got some business by doing this stuff, what are you telling me that the rest of those guys? Look, one of the reasons people want to get to be the head of the banking committee is because they know that the bankers are going to come to them and make severe campaign contributions.
Yeah, it's Willie Sutton, the line that is apparently apocryphal. Why do you rob banks? You know,
well, maybe,
that's where the money is.
Maybe not. But Kevin, thanks for the great call. Appreciate it a lot.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's go to Frank in Ballston Spa. Frank, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. And, oh, gosh, after that discussion, I don't know that my questions are going to hit any kind of point. The first thing I think in response to what Kevin's question was, is you have to ask young people, do you vote? Do you know how important it is for you to vote? And I don't think enough of us do that. We have to do that to every young person we meet. Just engage them and ask them, you know. And I think that term limits is probably, you know, a extremely important component to eliminating, well, not eliminating, but at least mitigating some corruption. My questions, however, Alan and Casey, were about what is the essence of an LLC? I opened a business, and I went to an attorney, and he explained to me that an LLC is a temporary or a way for me to start, and that ultimately I should establish a corporation. And then the other question I had was, perhaps we should be considering a time limit on an LLC. Maybe you have 36 months to submit articles of incorporation to convert that LLC to a corporation. Gentlemen, your comments.
Not being neither a corporate formation attorney nor a tax attorney, I am loath to offer sort of the fine distinction. It is a very, very good question as to the distinction. There are numerous tax distinctions between an LLC and a corporation, but I would hesitate to enumerate them. But in terms of, I believe both corporations, for a corporation, you have to file corporation documents. For an LLC, based on my experience with the Department of State, the information that you have to provide is minimal, like you would not believe.
But would you say, Frank, hold on one second. Wouldn't you say, Casey and Frank, that one of the reasons we have LLCs is to avoid responsibility one way or the other? So when you see, for example, we love the real estate section in the paper, and people buy expensive homes under an LLC.
Well, I mean, yeah. LLCs, for example, I mean, limited liability, yeah. the strict, sure. You know, most simple meaning, which is the one that I can understand. You know, if you're an owner of property and your company owns a bunch of buildings, you're going to set up an LLC for each one because, God forbid, if one burns down and
exactly.
you face a lot of legal actions. They can go after that building. They can't necessarily go after the mother corporation, as it were. But in terms of political giving, which is the distinction between LLCs and corporations that I understand somewhat better, you know, based on actions that were or a legal action, a specific lawsuit that was brought in recent months by Risa Sugarman, who's the chief enforcement officer of the Board of Elections. Whose operation is only about a year old, for an LLC or for any donating entity to be considered freestanding, it's supposed to have, it really should have its own staff, its own kind of physical space, as it were.
Presence.
Yeah, that it needs to have some kind of physical presence that is different from the mother corporation. Those are elements that can make the distinction between an LLC and an affiliated entity. You know, and one question is, one person who knows this a lot better than I did once put it to me: does the person who made the donation have a boss? You know, in other words, who is calling the shots? Who is ordering that check should be written? Is it somebody at the LLC or is it somebody working in another office connected to that office by strands of legal ownership and money?
And we know the answer to that.
I think Alan brings out a great, great point, because the reason that my wife and I established an LLC was actually to protect our home
sure.
and our property as we opened a small business.
Right.
And
sure.
we wrote a plan so that within 5 years, if we were successful, then we would develop a corporation. And I guess maybe we need to really shake out the carpet, if you will, on why an LLC is being granted. And as you said, is there a presence? Is there a purpose for this? If it's to give a small entrepreneur an opportunity to establish a business but not lose their home if their business goes under, then that's a great thing. But if the abuse of it is just, I just honestly, in listening to the program, I was completely angry.
Well,
and because it is a direct abuse of the principles of entrepreneurship.
Yes, but the point is, Frank, that they write the laws to help themselves,
sure.
legislators. So if they write LLCs, it means one more way they're going to get more money.
It certainly does not. It does no harm to any elected official for any elected official who is an incumbent to have the LLC loophole in place, because it multiplies the amount of money that you can take in.
Frank, we got to let you go. Thank you very
much. Thank you so much. Have a great afternoon.
Yeah, bye. We'll go to Harriet in Woodstock. Harriet, you're on.
Hi. I never thought I'd call in for a political show. I usually call Pets and Vets.
Pets and Vets. Right.
And actually,
Are you calling about the dining with dogs legislation that the governor just signed?
We could talk about that, but that's not what I'm
sorry.
I'm a personal friend of Maurice. I took care of him, Alan, once when you were up visiting Woodstock a few years.
Fantastic.
Yes, he was a sweetie and on my lap.
His ears just went up.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's why I'm calling. New York State politics is very kind of obscure. It's kind of dim. It's like who's doing what and where. But the thing that I appreciate, and it comes literally from Chris Gibson, who's a Republican, who I have many differences with, but a deep appreciation for his effort to inform me of what he has done and what he is initiating. And the same comes from Kirsten Gillibrand, but in not quite as comprehensive as Chris Gibson. He's the only politician who informs me of his behavior, and it's the only thing. We're all busy people. We don't have time to go digging and chasing and researching. We need it to come in our direction, and it's very hard to find what a politician has voted for or against.
You know, Harriet, I get 1,000 emails every day. And a lot of them are from politicians. And those politicians are braggadocio and telling me what they're telling me they've done. I'm a friend of Chris's, and I like him very much. But he is not unique in trying to tell you that he's done some things. I mean, Casey, do you have a different view on that?
No, I mean, those politicians, like, I mean, Chuck Schumer is another great example. They are very, very adept at keeping their constituents informed about what they're up to. You know, voters and constituents should understand that what they are getting is the politician's message. So you just want to make sure that you are taking it for what it is,
sure.
which is, you know, it's informational, certainly, but it's also promotional of that politician.
I don't hear from Chuck Schumer.
Oh, yeah.
From Kevin Cahill. I don't hear from all local politicians except, you know, our local paper.
Well, some do it better than others, certainly.
And I'm not so sure that you don't hear from those guys or that you don't filter out what they may be saying. Chuck comes around here, you know, on several occasions every year. He's great fun.
Yep.
But he, you know, there's an old joke about Chuck, which I think it may be a little unfair. Is the most dangerous place to be in the world is between Chuck and a microphone. But he's a great.
I have used that joke too.
Yeah, but he's a great guy.
He does something which is amazing, and which Kirsten Gillibrand has picked up as well, amazingly effective, I should say, which is if he is doing a conference call for a certain group of regions, he will have, on a national topic, for example, he will have his staff, his researchers, put together numbers that are specific to counties on what that's going to mean for you. In other words, the journalist will be able to very easily, which busy journalists need to do in this day and age, will be able to localize that story almost immediately with that information. And that's something you see in Gillibrand's press releases
as the old saying goes, as it applies to reporters, do their work for them.
Well, assist them in conveying the information to their readers.
Very nicely put. Go ahead, Harriet.
Well, I get emails from Chris Gibson because he hears from me in terms of a take action message from an environmental group or something.
Sure.
I do those frequently. And I hear back from basically two people, Chris Gibson and Kirsten Gillibrand, and they're New York State politicians. But I mean,
but you're a constituent of theirs, right?
Yes, exactly. And they hear from me, so then I hear from them. Yeah.
And there's a very good possibility that come 2018, you will have an opportunity to vote for Chris Gibson again for a different office, potentially governor.
Basically, what I'm saying is, it seems to me quite difficult to know what your representatives and senators in the state and on the national scale, they're doing.
Harriet, they all have websites now.
Well, yes. But
and you have to be able to filter this stuff. Harriet, I am so sorry. We are out of time. I thank you for calling, and you make a very good point. Appreciate
okay.
it.
Thanks.
Yeah, bye. Casey, I want to commend you on the work that you're doing and the kind of hard work. It takes guts. I mean, it really does. These guys are very powerful, and it takes guts to speak truth to power. It can't be that easy all the time.
Alan, I'm getting all blushy over here.
But okay.
Thank you. It's very, very kind. And once again, I'll point out that the story that we've been talking about was a collaboration with Chris Bragg.
You have done so, and it shows you to be a gentleman, and maybe not a scholar, but a gentleman.
scholar of the Board of Elections website, at least, over the course of the last couple of weeks.
We are out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in. We didn't leave anybody on the line. Thanks to Casey Seiler of the Times Union for joining us. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Apex Solar Power, Queensbury, New York, locally owned, installing solar panels, solar hot water, solar pool heating, apexsolarpower.com for information. Congregation Shahara, Tefillah, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing religious services Monday and Thursday at 7:30 a.m., third Fridays at 7:30 p.m., Saturdays at 10 a.m., and traditional high holiday services, synagogue.org for schedule. And the New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, serving the public for over 30 years, 800-342-3661, and De Blasius Chamber Music Series, presenting its 83rd season with three Sunday concerts through November 22nd at the Hyde, Glens Falls, New York. De Blasius Chamber-Music.org. Thanks again for joining us on today on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Susie Chekai. Our producers, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.